The Pharsalia by Lucan, Book 4, Part 2. Not thus did fortune upon Caesar smile in all the parts of earth, but gainst his arms dared somewhat, where Salona's lengthy waist opposes Hadria, and Iadar warm meets with his waves the breezes of the west. Their brave Curectae dwell, whose island home is girded by the main, on whom relied Antonius, and beleaguered by the foe, upon the furthest margin of the shore, safe from all ills but famine, placed his camp. But for his steeds the earth no forage gave, nor golden Ceres harvest, but his troops gnawed the dry herbage of the scanty turf within their rampart lines. But when they knew that Basilus was on the opposing shore with friendly force, by novel mode of flight they aimed to reach him. Not the accustomed keel they lay, nor build the ship, but shapeless rafts of timbers knit together, strong to bear all ponderous weight, on empty casks beneath, by Titan chains made firm, in double rows supported. Nor upon the deck were placed the oarsmen to the hostile dart exposed, but in a hidden space, by beams concealed. And thus the eye amazed beheld the mass move silent on its path across the sea, by neither sail nor stalwart arm propelled. They watched the main until the refluent waves ebb from the growing sands, then on the tide, receding, launch their vessel. Thus she floats with twin companions. Over each uprose, with quivering battlements, a lofty tower. Octavius, guardian of Illyrian seas, restrained his swifter keels and left the rafts free from attack, in hope of larger spoil from fresh adventures. For the peaceful sea may tempt them, and their goal in safety reached, to dare a second voyage. Round the stag thus will the cunning hunter draw a line of tainted feathers poisoning the air, or spread the mesh and muzzle in his grasp the straining jaws of the Molossian hound, and leash the Spartan pack. Nor is the brake trusted to any dog but such as tracks the scent with lowered nostrils, and refrains from giving tongue the while, content to mark by shaking leash the covert of the prey. Ere long they manned the rafts in eager wish to quit the island, when the latest glow still parted day from night. But Magnus's troops, Cilician once, taught by their ancient art, in fraudulent deceit had left the sea to view unguarded. But with chains unseen, fast to Illyrian shores, and hanging loose, they blocked the outlet in the waves beneath. The leading rafts passed safely, but the third hung in mid-passage, and by ropes was hauled below o'ershadowing rocks. These hollowed out in ponderous masses overhung the main, and nodding, seemed to fall. Shadowed by trees, dark lay the waves beneath. Hither the tide brings wreck and corpse, and burying with the flow, restores them with the ebb. And when the caves belch forth the ocean, swirling billows fall in boisterous surges back, as boils the tide in that famed whirlpool on Sicilian shores. Here, with Venetian settlers for its load, stood motionless the raft, Octavius's ships gathered round, while foemen on the land filled all the shore. But well the captain knew, Volteus, how the secret fraud was planned, and tried in vain with sword and steel to burst the bands that held them. Without hope he fights, uncertain where to avoid or front the foe. Caught in this strait, they strove as brave men should against opposing hosts. Nor long the fight, for fallen darkness brought a truce to arms. Then, to his men, disheartened and in fear of coming fate, Volteus, great of soul, thus spake in tones commanding, "Free no more, save for this little night. Consult ye now in this last moment, soldiers, how to face your final fortunes. No man's life is short who can take thought for death, nor is your fame less than a conqueror's, if with breast advanced ye meet your destined doom. None know how long the life that waits them. Summon your own fate, and equal is your praise, whether the hand quench the last flicker of departing light, or sheer the hope of years. But choice to die is thrust not on the mind. We cannot flee. See at our throats, e'en now, our kinsmen's swords. Then choose for death. Desire what fate decrees. At least in war's blind cloud we shall not fall, nor when the flying weapons hide the day, and slaughtered heaps of foemen load the field, and death is common, and the brave man sinks unknown, inglorious. Us, within this ship, seen of both friends and foes, the gods have placed. Both land and sea and island cliffs shall bear, from either shore, their witness to our death, in which some great and memorable fame thou, fortune, dost prepare. What glorious deeds of warlike heroism, of noble faith, time's annals show! All these shall we surpass. True, Caesar, that to fall upon our swords for thee is little. Yet beleaguered thus, with neither sons nor parents at our sides, shorn of the glory that we might have earned, we give thee here the only pledge we may. Yet let these hostile thousands fear the souls that rage for battle and that welcome death, and know us for invincible, and joy that no more wrafts were stayed. They'll offer terms, and tempt us with a base unhonored life. Would that, to give that death that shall be ours, the greater glory, they may bid us hope for pardon and for life, lest when our swords are reeking with our heart's blood, they may say, this was despair of living. Great must be the prowess of our end, if in these hosts that fight his battles, Caesar is to mourn this little handful lost. For me, should fate grant us retreat, myself would scorn to shun the coming onset. Life I cast away. The frenzy of the death that comes apace controls my being. Those alone whose end inspires them know the happiness of death, which the high gods, that men may bear to live, keep hid from others. Thus his noble words warmed his brave comrades' hearts, and who with fear and tearful eyes had looked upon the wain, turning his nightly course, now hoped for day, such precepts deep within them. Nor delayed the sky to dip the stars below the main, for Phoebus in the twins his chariot drove at noon near Cancer, and the hours of night were shortened by the archer. When day broke, lo, on the rocks the Istrians, while the sea swarmed with the galleys and their Grecian fleet, all armed for fight. But first the war was stayed, and terms proposed. Life to the foe, they thought, would seem the sweeter, by delay of death thus granted. But the band devoted stood, proud of their promised end, and life forsworn, and careless of the battle. No debate could shake their high resolve. In numbers few, gainst foemen numberless by land and sea, they waged the desperate fight. Then, satiate, turned from the foe. And first demanding death, Volteus bared his throat. What youth, he cries, dare strike me down, and through his captain's wounds attest his love for death? Then through his side plunged blades uncounted on the moment drawn. He praises all, but him who struck the first, grateful, with dying strength, he does to death. They rush together, and without a foe, work all the guilt of battle. Thus of yore rose up the glittering Dircaean band, from seed by Cadmus sown, and fought and died, dire omen for the brother kings of Thebes. And so in Phasis' fields, the sons of earth, born of the sleepless dragon, all inflamed by magic incantations, with their blood deluged the monstrous furrow, while the queen feared at the spells she wrought. Devoted thus to death, they fall. Yet in their death itself, less valor show than in the fatal wounds they take and give. For e'en the dying hand missed not a blow. Nor did the stroke alone inflict the wound, but rushing on the sword, their throat or breast received it to the hilt. And when by fatal chance, either sire with son, or brothers met, yet with unfaltering weight down flashed the pitiless sword. This proved their love, to give no second blow. Half living now, they dragged their mangled bodies to the side, whence flowed into the sea a crimson stream of slaughter. 'Twas their pleasure yet to see the light they scorn, with haughty looks to scan the faces of their victors, and to feel the death approaching. But the raft was now piled up with dead, which when the foemen saw, wondering at such a chief and such a deed, they gave them burial. Never through the world of any brave achievement was the fame more widely blazed. Yet meaner men, untaught by such examples, see not that the hand which frees from slavery needs no valiant mind to guide the stroke. But tyranny is feared as dealing death, and freedom's self is galled by ruthless arms, and knows not that the sword was given for this, that none need live a slave. Ah, death, wouldst thou but let the coward live, and grant the brave alone the prize to die. Nor less were Libyan fields ablaze with war, for Curio, rash from Lilybaean coast, sailed with his fleet, and borne by gentle winds betwixt half-ruined Carthage, mighty once, and Clupea's cliff, upon the well-known shore his anchors dropped. First from the hoary sea remote, where Bagra slowly ploughs the sand, he placed his camp, then sought the further hills and mazy passages of cavernous rocks, and Teias's kingdom called. From ancient days this name was given, and thus a swain retold the story handed down from sire to son. Not yet exhausted by the giant brood, earth still another monster brought to birth in Libya's caverns. Huger far was he, more justly far her pride than Briareus with all his 100 hands, or Typhon fierce, or Tityos. 'Twas in mercy to the gods that not in Phlegra's fields Antaeus grew, but here in Libya, to her offspring's strength, unmeasured, vast, she added yet this boon, that when in weariness and labor spent he touched his parent, fresh from her embrace, renewed in vigor, he should rise again. In yonder cave he dwelt, neath yonder rock, he made his feast on lions slain in chase. There slept he, not on skins of beasts or leaves, but fed his strength upon the naked earth. Perished the Libyan hinds and those who came, brought here in ships, until he scorned at length the earth that gave him strength, and on his feet, invincible and with unaided might, made all his victims. Last to Afric shores, drawn by the rumor of such carnage, came magnanimous Alcides, he who freed both land and sea of monsters. Down on earth he threw his mantle of the lion's skin, slain in Cleone, nor Antaeus less cast down the hide he wore. With shining oil, as one who wrestles at Olympia's feast, the hero rubs his limbs. The giant feared lest standing only on his parent earth his strength might fail, and cast o'er all his bulk hot sand in handfuls. Thus, with arms entwined and grappling hands, each seizes on his foe, with hardened muscles straining at the neck long time in vain. For firm the sinewy throat stood column-like, nor yielded, so that each wondered to find his peer. Nor at the first divine Alcides put forth all his strength, by lengthy struggle wearing out his foe, till chilly drops stood on Antaeus's limbs, and toppled to its fall the stately throat, and smitten by the hero's blows the legs began to totter. Breast to breast they strive to gain the vantage, till the victor's arms girdle the giant's yielding back and sides, and squeeze his middle part. Next, twixt the thighs he puts his feet, and forcing them apart, lays low the mighty monster, limb by limb. The dry earth drank his sweat, while in his veins warm ran the lifeblood, and with strength refreshed, the muscle swelled, and all the joints grew firm, and with his might restored, he breaks his bonds, and rives the arms of Hercules away. Amazed the hero stood at such a strength. Not thus he feared, though then unused to war, that Hydra fierce, which, smitten in the march of Inachus, renewed its severed heads. Again they join in fight, one with the powers which earth bestowed, the other with his own. Nor did the hatred of his stepdame find, in all his conflicts, greater room for hope. She sees, bedewed in sweat, the neck and limbs which once had borne the mountain of the gods, nor knew the toil. And when Antaeus felt his foeman's arms close round him once again, he flung his wearying limbs upon the sand to rise with strength anewed. All that the earth, though laboring sore, could breathe into her son, she gave his frame. But Hercules at last saw how his parent gave the giant strength. "Stand thou," he cried, "no more upon the ground thou liest at thy will. Here must thou stay, within mine arms constrained. Against this breast, Antaeus, shalt thou fall." He lifted up and held by middle girth the giant form, still struggling for the earth, but she no more could give her offspring vigor. Slowly came the chill of death upon him, and 'twas long before the hero, of his victory sure, trusted the earth and laid the giant down. Hence hoar antiquity that loves to prate and wonders at herself, this region called Antaeus's kingdom, but a greater name it gained from Scipio when he recalled from Roman citadels the Punic chief. Here was his camp. Here canst thou see the trace of that most famous rampart whence at length issued the eagles of triumphant Rome. But Curio rejoiced, as though for him the fortunes of the spot must hold in store the fates of former chiefs, and on the place of happy augury placed his tents ill-starred, took from the hills their omens, and with force unequal challenged his barbarian foe. All Africa that bore the Roman yoke then lay neath Varus. He, though placing first trust in his Latian troops from every side and furthest regions, summons to his aid the nations who confessed King Juba's rule. Not any monarch over wider tracts held the dominion. From the western belt near Gades, Atlas parts their furthest bounds. But from the southern, Hammon girds them in, hard by the whirlpools, and their burning plains stretch forth unending neath the torrid zone, in breadth its equal, till they reach at length the shore of ocean upon either hand. From all these regions tribes unnumbered flock to Juba's standard, Moors of swarthy hue, as though from Ind, Numidian nomads there, and Nasamon's needy hordes, and those whose darts equal the flying arrows of the Mede. Dark Garamantians leave their fervid home, and those whose coursers unrestrained by bit or saddle yet obey the rider's hand which wields the guiding switch. The hunter, too, who wanders forth his home a fragile hut, and blinds with flowing robe, if spear should fail, the angry lion, monarch of the steppe. Not eagerness alone to save the state stirred Juba's spirit. Private hatred, too, roused him to war. For in the former year, when Curio all things human and the gods polluted, he by tribune law essayed to ravish Libya from the tyrant's sway and drive the monarch from his father's throne while giving Rome a king. To Juba thus, still smarting at the insult, came the war, a welcome harvest for his crown retained. These rumors Curio feared, nor had his troops, ta'en in Corfinium's hold, in waves of Rhine been tested, nor to Caesar in the wars had learned devotion. Wavering in their faith, their second chief they doubt, their first betrayed. Yet when the general saw the spirit of fear creep through his camp and discipline to fail, and sentinels desert their guard at night. Thus in his fear he spake. By daring much, fear is disguised. Let me be first in arms, and bid my soldiers to the plain descend, while still my soldiers. Idle days breed doubt. By fight, forestall the plot. Soon as the thirst of bloodshed fills the mind, and eager hands grip firm the sword, and pressed upon the brow, the helm brings valor to the failing heart. Who cares to measure leaders' merits then? Who weighs the cause? With whom the soldier stands, for him he fights. As at the fatal show, no ancient grudge the gladiator's arm nerves for the combat. Yet as he shall strike, he hates his rival. Thinking thus, he leads his troops in battle order to the plain. Then victory on his arms deceptive shown, hiding the ills to come. For from the field, driving the hostile host with sword and spear, he smote them till their camp opposed his way. But after Varus's rout, unseen till then, all eager for the glory to be his, by stealth came Juba. Silent was his march, his only fear lest rumor should forestall his coming victory. In pretended war, he sends Sabura forth with scanty force to tempt the enemy, while in hollow vale he holds the armies of his realm unseen. Thus doth the sly Ichneumon, with his tail waving, allure the serpent of the Nile, drawn to the moving shadow. He, with head turned sideways, watches till the victim glides within his reach, then seizes by the throat behind the deadly fangs. Forth from its seat, balked of its purpose, though the brimming jaws gush a tide of poison. Fortune smiled on Juba's stratagem, for Curio, the hidden forces of the foe unknown, sent forth his horse by night without the camp to scour more distant regions. He himself at earliest peep of dawn bids carry forth his standards, heeding not his captain's prayer urged on his ears. Beware of Punic fraud, the craft that taints a Carthaginian war. Hung over him the doom of coming death, and gave the youth to fate, and civil strife dragged down its author. On the lofty tops, where broke the hills abruptly to their fall, he ranks the troops and sees the foe afar, who, still deceiving, simulated flight, till from the height, in loose unordered lines, the Roman forces streamed upon the plain in thought that Juba fled. Then first was known the treacherous fraud, for swift Numidian horse on every side surround them, leader, men, all see their fate in one dread moment come. No coward flees, no warrior bravely strides to meet the battle. Nay, the trumpet call stirs not the charger with resounding hoof to spurn the rock, nor galling bit compels to champ in eagerness, nor toss his mane and prick the ear, nor prancing with his feet to claim his share of combat. Tired, the neck droops downwards. Smoking sweat bedews the limbs. Dry from the squalid mouth protrudes the tongue. Hoarse, raucous panting issues from their chests. Their flanks distend, and every curb is dry with bloody foam. The ruthless sword alone could move them onward, powerless even then to charge, but giving to the hostile dart a nearer victim. But when the Afric horse first made their onset, loud beneath their hooves rang the wide plain, and rose the dust in air, as if by some Thracian whirlwind stirred, and veiled the heavens in darkness. When on Curio's host the tempest burst, each foeman in the rank stood there to meet his fate. No doubtful end hung in the balance. Destiny proclaimed death to them all. No conflict hand to hand was granted them. By lances thrown from far and sidelong sword thrusts slain, nor wounds alone, but clouds of weapons falling from the air by weight of iron o'erwhelmed them. Still drew in the straightening circle, for the first pressed back on those behind. Did any shun the foe, seeking the inner safety of the ring, he needs must perish by his comrades' swords. And as the front rank fell, still narrower grew the close-crushed phalanx, till to raise their swords space was denied. Still close and closer forced, the armed breasts against each other driven, pressed out the life. Thus, not upon a scene such as their fortune promised, gazed the foe. No tide of blood was there to glut their eyes, no members lopped asunder, though the earth so was piled with corpses, for each Roman stood in death upright against his comrade, dead. Let cruel Carthage rouse her hated ghosts by this fell offering. Let the Punic shades and bloody Hannibal from this defeat receive atonement. Yet 'twas shame, ye gods, that Libya gained not for herself the day, and that our Romans on that field should die to save Pompeius and the Senate's cause. Now was the dust laid low by streams of blood, and Curio, knowing that his host was slain, chose not to live, and as a brave man should, he rushed upon the heap, and fighting fell. In vain, with turbid speech hast thou profaned the pulpit of the forum, waved in vain from that proud citadel the tribune flag, and armed the people, and the Senate's rights betraying, hast compelled this impious war betwixt the rival kinsmen. Lo, thou liest before Pharsalus' fight, and from thine eyes is hid the war. 'Tis thus to suffering Rome, for arms seditious and for civil strife, ye mighty make atonement with your blood. Happy were Rome and all her sons indeed, did but the gods as rigidly protect, as they avenge, her violated laws. There Curio lies, untombed his noble corpse, torn by the vultures of the Libyan wastes. Yet shall we, since such merit, though unsung, lives by its own imperishable fame, give thee thy meed of praise. Rome never bore another son who, had he right pursued, had so adorned her laws. But soon the times, their luxury, corruption, and the curse of too abundant wealth, in transverse streams swept o'er his wavering mind. And Curio changed, turned with his change, the scale of human things. True, mighty Sulla, cruel Marius, and bloody Cinna, and the long descent of Caesar and of Caesar's house became lords of our lives. But who had power like him? All others bought the state. He sold alone. End of Book 4.